Obviously, we're going to be talking about Mother's Day and hopefully in a more expansive way that addresses and talks about things that are really not only honoring to mothers, but honoring to the institution of motherhood itself. And so I want to just talk today about restoring and advancing and honoring the biblical institution of motherhood. Before I do that, I want to mention that Kevin and Debbie have been married 40 years today. I said to Kevin, I said, I bet it seems like 4 days. He said 400 years. No, he didn't say 400 years, but no, but those two have a good marriage, and it's just good to see them. They work together, too. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, so anyway. And the other thing I wanted to mention is Ryan Etter, who's back here, who is a child of this congregation. He worships at another place now, but he's in today for his parents, his mother, for Mother's Day. He got engaged. So congratulations, Ryan. And you, forgive me, I forget. Mia, that's right. And I'm just not very good, Mia, with that kind of stuff. I apologize. But so you two have been seeing, you've been together for a long time, seeing each other.
2.5 years.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, congratulations. And we're still your church family in many respects, Ryan. So we're very happy for you and Mia. And we'll look forward to hearing, you know, about your wedding plans and all that kind of stuff and where you're going to live and all those things. So, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So, as you know, on Mother's Day, oftentimes I have people come and share some testimonials about their moms. And usually I ask a question somewhat like this: in what manner did your mother bless you and have a wonderful impact upon your life? In what manner did your mother bless you and have a wonderful impact upon your life? And so the first person that I asked to come up and speak is Ryan Etter. So come on up, Ryan.
Well, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Good.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
I was up here for Father's Day last year, and hopefully I don't cry as hard as I did, but it's okay. So we're going to be talking about the most important influences my mother has had on my life. So my mother is very special to me. She's my world and my rock, and I would be lost without her. The most important influence she has had on my life was motivating me through life going to church, you know, and I've been very independent on going and continuing to serve the Lord every day. She's helped motivate me through education, the countless fights at the kitchen table, and pushing me to be better with homework and studying. I know you missed that. I know you missed that. I became independent with hard work in college, and it all paid off. Another is her love for the Lord and others, and that has impacted me growing up and influenced me to be a better person. The final influence is showing me how to find the right woman to be in my life. That's finding the good personality and traits in a woman. I'm so blessed to find Mia and to have somebody to spend the rest of my life with. And I'm thankful to know that you will be gaining another daughter in our family. I love you, Mom, more than anything and more than words can express. And I just want to know how much I appreciate you. Thank you.
Anybody who knows Judy knows that that's all true and more. So just a wonderful person and a wonderful family, a wonderful family. So we have a relatively new family to our congregation, but we have some other people, some children who are associated with our congregation for a longer time. And so I've asked Becca Grassel if she would come up and share about her mom. So her mom didn't know anything about it. So Becca, if you come up and share about your mom, that'd be great.
Okay. I brought the tissues with me. Okay. True love. True love is a hot topic for our society. It's often described in many different ways. Most commonly, it's talked about through the relationship between a man and a woman. For the Christian, we know why the human heart searches so desperately for this love. In reality, we are longing for, to fill our Jesus-shaped hole, as we often sang about at home growing up. Once a person enters into a true relationship with Jesus Christ, they actually understand what true love looks like. Since we are made in God's image, he graciously gives us pieces of his true love here on earth. I was truly blessed that God gave me a clear example of his true love from the moment of conception. God chose to give me to an earthly mother who always embodied true love in every stage of my life. Some of the many qualities I will always be so grateful for are her selflessness, her patience, and her dedication. My mom has always made sure that our family's needs were taken care of first. She burned the candle at both ends to ensure we always had whatever we needed. When we were little, she would be washing dishes till 11 o'clock at night. And when we were older, she would be driving us all over till 11 o'clock at night and then up early the next day to take us to the next activity. Every time I've called her over the years, about one of my boys being sick or to vent to her about my long day, she always made it clear how badly she wanted to jump in the car or the plane and travel the far distance to me immediately. Little did she know how her advice, encouraging words, and listening ear were sometimes the only way I could make it through. Her patience has always amazed me over the years. No matter how crazy life gets, she always just takes things one step at a time. Between myself, my sister, and my dad, she was always the person we turned to first. To this day, I have no idea how she stayed so calm and patient, especially since she had to go through the ups and downs of having a teenage girl twice. Now that I'm a mother myself, I often pray that I will have the patience of my mom. Although two rambunctious little boys don't always make that easy. When I think about the dedication my mom has shown over the years, my mind races to a million different things. I could tell countless stories of how she's always been my biggest fan for driving 10 hours one day to get me to and from, or from college, and the endless nights she would help me with events that I put on at high school. And the dedication that sticks out to me the most was definitely when I first became a mother. As some of you know, I was not introduced into motherhood calmly, as many of us aren't. Although, you know, when the nurses tell you that your newborn is fiery before you even meet him, that you're in for quite a ride. Hunter is a bright, thoughtful, and wonderful, full of life kid now. However, he started his first 8 months of life in extreme pain with silent acid reflux. He barely slept at all and was very vocal about his unfortunate discomfort. Jeremiah was an amazing support, as always. But if it weren't for my mom, I think I might have totally lost my mind. She was there in the hospital when he was born, and again when Hunter had to be hospitalized at 5 weeks because the doctors were concerned. My mom drove those 4.5 hours one way at least once a month for the first year of his feisty little life. Having that break to look forward to made such a world of difference. I don't know how I would gauge how to be a good mom to my boys if it weren't for her. The true love she has poured out to me all these years has always pointed me to the ultimate love of Christ. 1 Peter 1:22 says, "Now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for each other, love one another deeply from the heart." I pray that one day my boys will be able to see Christ in me the way I can so clearly see him in my mom and her deep love from the heart. Especially now that God has blessed me with two great moms through marriage and two wonderful grandmothers to our boys. Happy Mother's Day to my moms and to all of the moms here today. Your daily selflessness, patience, and dedication are appreciated more than you know.
Amen. So, do you see what godly parents can do? Can you see it? Can you see it in the life of Ryan? Can you see it in the life of Becca? That when you have good parents, when you have great moms, qualitatively it really impacts the lives of their children. And their children grow up and are able to do and say the things that you heard and saw today. The institution of motherhood is designed by God. And when it's done rightly, and when it's supported, and when it's encouraged, great things can happen. Now, I recognize that not every woman is a mother, but every woman had a mother. So when we talk about Mother's Day, it goes both ways. It goes to those who are mothers and have children now, and those children honoring their mother. And it goes to those adult women who had mothers, and those mothers honoring their mother. There's not a lot of honor in our culture today. We are not an honor-based culture. We just aren't. We're a culture that's predicated on pleasure and convenience and a lot of narcissism, self-love, those kinds of things that get in the way of our ability to honor. And so as part of the honoring, I'm going to concede that Ruth is waving her hand back there saying the kids should go back right now. So. And some of you parents are saying, thank you, thank you. So if you want to go back to Children's Church, you are now allowed to, dismissed to go back to Children's Church at this point. So I ran across this cartoon the other day, and I thought I would include it. Because when we talk about moms and all that they do, on one hand, Mother's Day is recognizing all these things that a mother usually does, but it should also be something more. And so you see all of these different kinds of people there, the maid, the taxi driver, the cook, the nurse, the teacher, the fortune teller, the priest. You know, moms do all of that kind of stuff and more, don't they, for their children. But motherhood is more than just that as well. Mother's Day belongs theologically within the five great institutions given to us by God. How many of you knew that there were five great institutions that God gave to us? Did you know that? This is so theologians call them the five great institutions. And an institution is this, a biblical institution is this. It is a God-created and mandated organizational building block and structure from which culture and society derive their identity, purpose, and function. These five great institutions do this. They are building blocks. They are organizational structures from which we as a culture and as a society derive our identity, our purpose, and our function. They are that important. They are that significant. So what are the five great institutions? The first thing, the first institution that God created that's true for all people, all places, is family. Family is an institution. The second is work. That we have to work. We have to be able to provide for ourselves and make a living so that we can eat, so that we can be safe. The third is government. God, I know that's hard to believe, but God created government, you know? Probably not quite as close to the ideal as he originally intended it, but God created government. Government is an institution. It's a way of managing people and making sure that people don't live in chaos. Religion and or worship is the fourth great institution. The capacity to have a relationship with God and to live according to his precepts and his mandates. The final one, and this is a little more complicated and would take me quite a while to unpack, is the Sabbath. The idea of rest, the all-encompassing idea of rest that's given to us by God. So within the institution of family, there are two primary offices. Those offices are the office of a father, the office of a mother. They are designated, they are appointed. They are roles that both husbands and wives play within the institution of family. They are essential. They cannot be negotiated away. They are the very foundation of the family itself. I don't know if you know this, but in the 20th century, we tried to play around with the idea of family. Someone thought, so if any of you have heard of the Jewish kibbutz, have you ever heard of that before? The kibbutz that the Jews tried to... And so they wanted to experiment and say, well, you don't really need a mom and dad. You can just take kids and put them into a kind of institution or a school and they'll be fine. That landed with a loud thud. It just didn't work. Because everyone here has been created with a dad-shaped and a mom-shaped vacuum in your heart. We're all hardwired for parents to be involved in our lives. And if parents are involved in our lives in a good way, incredible things can happen. And if parents are involved in our lives in a bad way, then horrible things can happen. So there's this connection. It's inescapable. This office of father and mother is essential to any healthy society. Now, some societies can exist for a certain period of time, but after a while, it just all starts to unravel. Because fathers and mothers provide the stability for the development of children. And if that stability isn't there, if that development doesn't happen, then you experience chaos, destruction. There's a reason why in the inner city, where up to 80% of the families in certain portions of the inner city are matriarchal, they lack a father figure. There's a reason why there's so much poverty. There's a reason why there's so much crime. There's a reason why there's so much chaos. Because those children need parents. And they need parents who are committed to their children. So when we talk about the mother then, the mother plays this incredible role, or ought to, in the lives of their children. There are no substitutes for the mother and father shaped vacuums in every child's heart. There are no substitutes. There's some compensations. there might be some kind of adaptation. But we have people in this room right now who did not have the kind of relationship with their mother and or their father that they should have had, that it was more negative than it was positive. And you could be decades old, and your heart aches to this day. Because that vacuum, that mom vacuum, was not filled adequately. And it sent you off on a trajectory that makes you mourn and grieve. Even now, you may have healed from most of that. You may have compensated. You may have found another person who could speak into your life and be sort of a surrogate mom in some way. But it's not how God intended. It's still not exactly what you needed. And to this day, I can't begin to tell you how many people I've talked with over the course of my life. People who were my age, sick in their 60s, whose hearts still ache, wishing that they had had the kind of mom that God intended for them to have. So whether we are a father or whether we are a mother, when we choose to engage in activities or commitments that could involve children, then all commitments and priorities are and must be redirected and or suspended. When we choose to engage in activities, when we choose to engage in a sexual relationship, and the possibility of children is present, then if children become present, then all other priorities need to be realigned, because we have a life, and a life that probably will exist 70 to 80 years, and a life that will intersect with hundreds and thousands of other people. And that life can be a blessing, or that life that was created could be a curse. It's a tremendous responsibility to have children. And it's a tremendous responsibility to engage in activity that may cause children. So I want to take a little rabbit trail here for just a minute. Currently, there's some politicians who are legislating universal abortion throughout the 50 states in the United States up to 9 months. That is the legislation. Up to 9 months. I don't know what all of your politics are. I don't care what all your politics are. This isn't even a political issue. It's a moral issue. How is it that a child can be born at 6 months and live? And we consider that child a human being, but that we have had some examples, and now they want some legislation where we can extinguish a life up to 9 months. And in the world of higher education, there is discussion in the world of higher education, in philosophical circles, that some children should not be considered human until they are 2 years of age. There are people who are living off our tax dollars in major universities discussing that children ought not to be considered human beings until they are 2 years of age. You don't believe me? Then read Peter Singer, who's been not only in Australia, but North America and Europe. So when I talk about restoring the honor and dignity of motherhood, this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. That when motherhood is honored and treasured, those issues become almost non-existent. This church, we as believers have to commit ourselves to the honor of motherhood, how we treat our moms, and how we treat our children as moms and fathers, and how we train our children to treat us. I was in a situation just the other day where I was in someone's home and one of the small children was loud and spoke, not just to me but to others, kind of loudly and disrespectfully. And the parent stopped that child and said, "You apologize. Look at him in the face and apologize for how you spoke to them." You think that's good parenting? I think that's good parenting. But that's good parenting because they want to honor their children with discipline, and then their children will honor them later because they have been disciplined. So the practice and efficacy of all other institutions are influenced and or are dependent upon the vibrancy. So the other institutions that I talked to you about, family, work, government, worship, and not as much to the, although sort of kind of in an indirect way, the Sabbath, when the family is healthy, when the father and mother embrace their offices fully as God intended them to, then work is better. Government is better. Worship is better. All of those things are dependent upon a vibrant, healthy family system within the culture. We don't even realize it, do we? We are responsible for this dynamic, incredibly powerful thing that the culture is teaching us and telling us it's really not a big deal. So, you know, if you ever want to know what's really, really important to the enemy, then find out the thing that he diminishes the most. Does this make sense to you all? So the practice and efficacy of all other institutions, work, government, worship, and the Sabbath are linked to the vibrancy of the family. We want to improve our culture, improve our offices as father and as mothers. So Ryan and Mia, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you're a wonderful young couple getting ready to start your life together. And as you do, you two sit down and say, what are the non-negotiables that our family is going to be about? What are those things that we will always value and treasure and hold to be true that we will never negotiate away? What are our boundaries? What is God calling us to? What will we be known for as a married couple together? If you two do those things, You will not only have a wonderfully successful marriage, you will have a powerful marriage for other people to copy themselves after. So all of this is why God places an enormous premium on and emphasis on the honoring of our mother and father. Biblical Christians have a responsibility and calling to fight for and to restore within their churches, within their communities, within their country, the family as a primary institution of God. This is something that we have to defend at all costs. I think this is true. I never gave any permission. I never made it a question about how anyone could enter into my family and corrupt it in whatever way they wanted to. If you wanted a fight, that would be a good way. I worked hard to protect my children, and I worked hard to protect my wife, and I worked hard to protect the integrity of the family. I was not perfect at it, but I am telling you that I tried to do that. And I think that we have to be really careful about how the values of this world impact and influence the way in which we raise our families and how we embrace the office of mother and father within the world in which we live. In today's world, a woman's value is often determined by the way in which she can contribute to the culture and society through work or her profession or whatever. And that's very valuable. That's very good. There's nothing wrong with that. But if that supersedes family, even if you have no children, then it's misplaced. It has eroded away. It has made us vulnerable. We must protect the institution of the family. And those two pillars, the office of mother and father, at all costs. So biblical Christians have a responsibility and calling to fight for and to restore within their churches, within their communities, within their country, the family as a primary institution of God. God considered this to be so important. Of all the Ten Commandments, there is only one of the Ten Commandments that ends with a blessing. And this is it. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land and the Lord your God is giving you. If you honor your father and mother, the blessing will be that you will live long in the land in which the Father, in which the Lord God has given you. He goes on, Moses goes on further in Exodus 21, where he says, where as he's been given this law from God, where it says, anyone who curses his mother or father must be put to death. So in that primitive culture, honoring your parents was so important that if you publicly dishonored your parents, it could be a death sentence. And you think, well, that seems a little extreme, really? If a child undermined the honor of the family and their parents, all you had back then was your word. All of the business transactions that you made, any credibility that you had in that community, if no one would believe you or trust you, you would starve to death. So it was crucial that families, that moms and dads were honored by their children because the consequences could be great. Interestingly, in 1 Timothy 3:5-8, it says, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives, implying parents, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So if we as Christians do not, whether you are a child or whether you are an adult, many of us have been in situations where as adults we have to care for our older adults. And the text here says that if we do not provide for our relatives and for especially for our household, our parents, then we have denied the faith. Wow. That's a radical accusation. We have denied the faith, and we are worse than an unbeliever. An unbeliever is a person who is separated from God. An unbeliever is a person who has no hope for eternal life. Do you think God places a premium on the family? So the text that Rocky read earlier from Mark, where he says, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. He's talking to the Pharisees here. As it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. For Moses said, and he's speaking very clearly to the Pharisees here, for Moses said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is Corban that is devoted to God. So here's what happened. That oftentimes young people, especially young men, during an ecstatic experience, spiritual experience, where they were so more to they wanted to demonstrate their commitment to God so powerfully that they would say that anything that I have or own, anything that comes to me, I will give to God. Anything that I inherit from my parents, I will give to God. And Jesus said, well, wait a minute. This person made this vow to give everything he had to God, and you, the Pharisees, are saying he has to hold to that commitment, even if it means that his parents starve to death, which is not honoring them. And you're telling them not to honor them. And by you telling them not to honor them, you should be stoned. I'm telling you, there's this tremendous emphasis the Bible places on the importance of the family and the elements that make that family up, and how we need every one of us. So whether you are a parent or not, whether you have parents living or not, whether you have children or not, what, regardless, everyone here ought to be about the project of raising up, highlighting, emphasizing, healing, restoring the family, motherhood, as it relates to God. What he calls us to do. So, When I ask Ryan to come up, and when I ask Becca to come up and share their life experiences with their mom, that's the kind of fruit that we need to produce in all of our families. And maybe down the road, what I should do, be great to have a person who's in a situation where their children have to care for them and to hear their testimony, to hear how they're loved and honored by their children, to hear moms say that, and to hear them say thank you in the same way that we heard Ryan and Becca say thank you. I was going to spend some time in Proverbs 31 because that's kind of the template. I just want to say a couple things about it, though. Proverbs 31 is an idealized version of what a woman was supposed to be in that particular culture. Every Saturday night, I mean, the Sabbath was on a Saturday in Jewish culture. Every Saturday night at dinner, the family read Proverbs 31. So if you can imagine sitting at dinner and you have four or five children, couple boys, couple girls, and your parents read Proverbs 31 every Saturday night. Where it talks about the virtuous woman. Let me ask you this question. If there were a lot of women in our culture, young women in our culture, who embodied the principles of Proverbs 31, and if there were a lot of men in our culture who would not look for anything less than a woman that embraced the ideals of Proverbs 31, what kind of world do you think we'd live in? So if those young girls and those young boys heard Proverbs 31 being read 52 times throughout the course of a year, do you think they walked away thinking, I need to find this woman who's just virtuous in every way? And I cannot be satisfied with anything less than being virtuous. And do you think those girls were thinking, if I'm going to attract a young male, then I need to be a virtuous woman. So I'm going to live my life in such a way that I can have that kind of a man who wants that kind of a woman, and vice versa. So it speaks to both. Now, I think that in many Christian circles, we have a lot of women who work hard to be like Proverbs 31. And I think that we have a number of men who are looking for a woman like that, but not enough. And so I want to just say to you, let's be that church. Let's be those people. Let's work hard to authentically be that kind of mom, for us to be that kind of kid, to be that kind of church and community that makes itself look really, really different than the rest of the world because of how we live our lives and because of how we honor women. There's much more that I can say, and I'm out of time. But I just got to tell you that with everything that I see going on in the world today, in the culture in which we live, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in 1 Peter, and I'm going to continue to do so. And Peter's solution to the persecution that was about to spill itself out on all those Christians in those churches in which and where they lived, Peter was saying, I don't want you to camouflage yourself. I want you to look even more Christian. I want you to appear to be even more Christ-like. I want you to be even more holy. And so by extension, let's do that with motherhood in this church. Let's honor our moms in every conceivable way that we possibly can, whether you are a mother or whether you have a mother. Let's be that community in that church.